What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to a live Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, you alive? How you doing?
Oh, I thought the Vince Carter shot was going in, Nick. I really did.
Yeah, it was crazy. Nets picked up a close one, 114-112 in Atlanta in a game that was down to the wire, which it probably shouldn't have been because the Nets missed, 21 free throws tonight? So 33 of 54 from the line. It was a nail-biter, but they pulled off the W, and that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, that's all that matters, Nick. It didn't look like we were going to close it out. It just felt inevitable that it was just going to be one of those nights for the Nets. But thankfully, it ended our way. You know, we just made one free throw that counted. You know, we gave the Atlanta Hawks some free fried chicken. So it's a good night for everyone, I guess.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like the Nets in the first half, I would say they outplayed the Hawks pretty well. They just weren't hitting their shots. They missed probably like seven open threes to start the game. Second half, it was more of like they got outplayed by Atlanta, turning over the ball, getting sloppy. Atlanta had 18 offensive rebounds total for the game. It felt like more than half of those came in the second half. Just overall, the second half wasn't up to par in terms of just general play.
Yeah, the execution on both ends, especially the offensive end. In that first quarter, you know, Allen Crabb had a ton of open shots and just couldn't hit him. He hit one above the break three, you know, probably the hardest three you can hit. I think in the third quarter, just not making shots when they were there. You know, there were open perimeter shots and, you know, it wasn't just the best night. Spencer Dinwiddie offensively was probably the best performer. It just didn't necessarily work out on that end, but you know, we grinded and we got to the free throw line. We just didn't make them either. So despite the fact that we did, we got the right shots, we just couldn't make them.
Yeah, the three-point shooting was weird. Like, Joe Harris probably hasn't had that many open looks. Like, in the start of the game, he missed two that he probably hadn't had all month. Then you mentioned Allen Crabb. He just couldn't hit. And he was missing, you know, the same spot over and over again. That's a little concerning. But like you said, Dinwiddie was huge in this game. I felt like he kind of saved the game for the Nets. You know, D'Lo wasn't bad. He was very smooth. But Dinwiddie, 23 points, 7 of 14, 4 of 7 from 3, 7 assists, 6 rebounds, only 2 turnovers. You just felt his presence a lot in this game.
Yeah, and I thought D'Lo was great in the first half especially. And then that dagger 3 as well. So he had his moments, and some of his passes tonight were just absolutely sublime. So it's not to say that D'Angelo had a bad game. Obviously, looking at the box score, it certainly doesn't look pretty. Spencer was just far more efficient. And so it was probably, I think these two are starting to play well together. And that's really positive. Obviously, a lot of guys are down on Caris LeVert's recent form. But if we have at least D'Angelo and Spencer playing well, we are going to get some wins, even in this tough stretch. But they were both great. You know, D'Angelo with his passing and that dagger three. And then Spencer just driving at will.
Yeah, I felt like you mentioned the box score not great for D'Angelo, but I still felt like he had a positive impact on the game. Like you said, some of those elite passes he had, and just overall his presence was kind of commenting at certain points. Rodion's game really stuck out for me. You know, 16 points, 5 of 7, 4 of 5 from 3, 6 rebounds. He pretty much had every Hawks player wanting to kill him. You just love the feistiness he brings.
What about that dunk, ladies and gents? Gee, Lord. Air Latvia is actually an airline, I believe, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure it sounds like it. It's fitting. Yeah. If not, I guess you should start one now.
Yeah, he needs to get a sponsorship with them if that is the case, because he's just got ferocity and confidence that not many rookies in this league have. You know, we probably wouldn't have seen that in the first few games of the season from a guy like Rodions, but now he just is dunking on bloody 7'2" blokes. And Alex Len, you know, you've made the list, the poster. It looks bloody nice. And yeah, I think every time that Rodions was out on the floor, we just looked more cohesive. You know, and when he's hitting the three ball, obviously it just makes it that much better. And he's been great the past few matchups with that sort of perimeter shot. So he's been absolutely sensational. And with Dinwiddie, he was probably the best performer in terms of, you know, the expectations we have of them. He did exceed them.
Yeah, it's just like the energy he brings out there. And when he's knocking down a three-point shot, just imagine if, you know, Crabb and Harris were hitting or everyone is hitting that night, it would just be a crazy night. He's been really hot the last few games. I really like what he brings. And like you said, the confidence attacking Vince Carter, we're going to see him attacking a lot of guys. He's just like a mismatch for a lot of guys because he's so quick at his size, but he has a great wingspan and great length.
Yeah, he really does. And obviously, you know, you just know what he's good at already. You just can't wait to see in the next coming years how he continues to blossom as a player, because you can already tell he's probably going to be one of those Marcus Smart, Patrick Beverley types that not a lot of other opposing teams are going to like. And I don't necessarily think he intends to do it. I think he's just through his general energy and demeanor, it just seems to rub off the wrong way on players. When we saw D'Angelo grab John Collins, like, nah, man, because of Rodion's foul. It just seems to me that, like, he accidentally makes those sort of dinky little fouls and stuff. And that's just, you know, rookie errors. But I don't mind that. I'd much rather prefer to have that sort of instigator. I know, I think in preseason shows and in certain questions of mailbags, we've been asked, you know, would we want an instigator? Do we need an instigator? I think Rodion sort of fits that mold to an extent. And I think his game is just continuing to grow. And I think 21 minutes, I think we could see 25 plus in certain matchups going forward.
Yeah, he's a pure competitor. Like you said, he just brings that extra edge. And, you know, opponents aren't going to like that because he's going to die for the loose balls. He's going to fight for everything. And I just love it. And I think his contract is going to end up being one of the best bargains in the NBA over the next couple of seasons. I think Sean Marks signed him for a four-year, like, $6.6 million deal. And a lot of people were like, oh, you usually don't sign your second rounders that long. Well, Rodion's looks like he's going to turn into a really nice piece for the Nets. And he's obviously super young, hasn't played a ton of basketball. Really looking forward to that. Talking about another young guy in the Nets, Jared Allen, had a really nice game. Other than defending John Collins, he put up 20 points, 16 free throw attempts, 12 rebounds, 7 offensive boards.
His mentality tonight was just next level. Love that little shove on Torian Prince. It was just like that sort of moment where it's like, he ain't going to take no shit right now. He kept that throughout the entire match, which is what you want. He was just absolutely awesome. You know, just feasting on boards. His free throw shooting, I didn't think was horrible. He looked confident at least going there. It was more some of the other guys that you expect to sort of make them. But, you know, a career high in free throws. And he just was super impactful. And I think this gives him confidence because, you know, John Collins was still outstanding as well. But, you know, Jared Allen was equally good for us. So I think both of those guys are great players and great players going forward. I think Brian Fonseca put out, how, like, did both of these guys, you know, slip out of the lottery? But I think when it comes to the big men, you sort of take that little bit of a reach. And I think that these two guys are going to be really, really nice players going forward.
Yeah, there was a lot of concern about how John Collins would fit in the NBA. Obviously, it's working out pretty well for him. And they're worried that, you know, Jared Allen wouldn't really compete. Obviously, tonight, he got turned down early on. I think the 7 offensive rebounds really stuck out for me. Just the ability to kind of tip those extra passes out, take advantage of his length, because it's not every night you're going to go against a 7-footer or a big front line. So it's an area where he can really attack, especially when he's fully engaged like tonight.
Yeah, and I think that started, he set the tone for himself early and really made an impact, you know, from that first quarter going forward. And I think that this is a sort of precursor and a sort of standard for him going forward. You know, this is what you can sort of do on the offensive glass and sort of impacting the boards there. I think that's something that he really needs to focus on. But Nick, do we want to address one of the questions from our dude SSV?
Yeah, let's do it. We got another one from my SSV. He's hitting us with a lot of good questions.
We love it. What do you guys think is up with LeVert? Are we still at the point where he is working his way back?
Yeah, I think so. I think every other game, it seems like he goes from a good game to a bad game. Tonight, right from the get-go, he did not look comfortable. He looked out of sync from the start. Obviously, he's still, you know, was solid defensively, but offensively, I think he's still trying to find his role. It's obviously a big change from the beginning of the season where he was used to having a ton of touches, and now it's like here and there. So I think he's just out of sync with his role and just being back on the floor.
He did the bucket that he did make tonight was, dear
vintage
Lord,
Levert,
it was nice. It was sort of what we saw from him pre-injury, where he was just dancing on dudes and some of that pretty footwork. It was just, you know, had him in the blender. I think it was Collins at that stage. But it surprises me to see him that he was leading the team in plus minus at plus 12 in 21 minutes. But it didn't seem like, well, I was sort of expecting, you know, following the matchup to sort of go to the plus minus and see him sort of in the minuses and sort of leading that way. But that's sort of where you sort of go, and it looks a little bit misleading because I don't think he was super impactful. He made some okay defensive plays, rebounded okay, had a steal here or there. But I think in terms of, he's certainly working his way back. There are some worrying issues, but at the same time, you know, you make the direct comparison to a guy like Gordon Hayward, who's only hitting stride now and had an equally serious, if not more serious, you know, leg injury. So I think Caris LeVert is younger as well, so he has that going on his side as at the same time. But if he's just going to play that sort of bench role, bench guard alongside Dinwiddie for the rest of the season, I still think he's going to be valuable. And then next season, we'll probably see him at his best. And even if he shows some moments and flashes, you know, he's still better than Jared Dudley, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, these sort of guys who are, you know, in deep and out of the rotation.
Yeah, I think athletically, the one positive is he looks fine. It's just more of his rhythm. Like, there was just a couple of dribbles where he just really didn't know what to do, and the way the defenses were playing him, he just was kind of out of it. So I have confidence, like you said, he'll be back next season. I'm not fully confident he'll be good the rest of the year. I think he'll have moments and stretches. Just maybe he can get going right before the playoffs and just find a consistent role. We don't need anything crazy for him. We just need the occasional, you know, stretch where he kind of takes over where the offense is stagnant and then just bring that great defense. You know, deflections is something that he definitely brings that not a lot of Nets do.
Yeah, and I think he can still be out there in terms of, you know, closing sort of defensive lineups at times. He adds a lot of value on that end of the floor, and you know he'll find his way. He's had his ups and downs, and we've spoken about them on previous iterations of the Buzz last season. But Nick, unruly star, thinks that the Nets need to make practicing their free throws an emphasis in some of their off days. What are your thoughts on that? Obviously,
you know, it has been an issue a couple times this year, so like it is something concerning. Maybe they do need to put a little bit of more stress on that, but some of it's just guys having an off night and just like the whole team. I think it's like, you know, you see a couple guys miss free throws and all of a sudden everybody's missing free throws. Very rare do we see Joe Harris miss two free throws, Alan Crabb miss two free throws all in the same night. The only guy that's like not super surprising, Ed Davis isn't a great free throw shooter. You're going to expect one of these from him. So just like everybody missed two or three and they usually don't. Even D'Angelo Russell is usually really good. Same thing with Dinwiddie.
Yeah, it sort of spreads like wildfire. It's contagious. And I think that that's the same with, you know, perimeter shooting. You
know, it happens tonight too.
It is. It can be a positive effect or it can be a negative effect. And tonight it just happened to be the negative effect. And luckily we're still able to scrape through with the win. But if we do, if this trend is to continue against teams like Detroit, OKC, and any team that we're versing in the rest of the season, we are not going to win games. It's as simple as that. So I'm not really that big of an advocate. I've sort of read, you know, into sort of free throws and in the sense that practicing them more actually gets you more in your head in that sort of sense. These guys are professionals. They know how to shoot free throws. Yes, Ed Davis is probably the one that probably does need to practice them a little bit. But at the same time, you know, Joe Harris, like you sort of mentioned, all those names, then they're 70% plus the free throw shooters, 75%, some 80%. I back them in. It's just one of those nights. And I think that every team has them. You know, we're not the Lakers in any stretch of the imagination. But if it does continue, then something, I guess, needs to change in that sort of sense. But I'm hoping this is just a blip on the radar.
Yeah, it was just lucky that it happened against a team like Atlanta, where they're not an amazing team. You know, if this happened in the road trip against one of the good teams, it definitely would have been a loss. That includes, you know, missing wide open. I feel like it was just contagious from missing the wide open threes to the wide open free throws. Like, it was just shots, and that's usually knocked down. Maybe they don't knock them all down, but they definitely would shoot a higher percentage than they did tonight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And another question from our boy, Will Jackson. Do you think we see Trevion Graham at all for the remainder of the season? Hasn't been spoken about a lot.
I think we'll definitely probably see him maybe for a couple minutes at certain points, but I think he might have lost his role in the rotation. Usually coaches are opposed to like taking guys out because of injury, but in this situation, the Nets just look so much better offensively in terms of just the rhythm and in sync and what Rodion brings. And it seems like the approach is different too. Like, Kenny knows what he's doing with the starting lineup, starting D'Lo, Crabb, Harris, Rodion's and Jared Allen. It's a completely different approach than starting who we had before. What was it? D'Lo, LeVert, Harris, Trevion Graham, and Jared Allen. Like, the current starting lineup is all spacing, where the other starting lineup was very little spacing.
Yeah, and Crabb hasn't been providing a lot of spacing lately. So I guess that his role is going to be one to watch going forward, whether he goes to the bench. It hasn't necessarily affected Joe Harris positively that much in terms of having that extra guy out there. So I'm not sure Alan Crabb deserves to have that starting spot locked up, but it's certainly one to watch. But SSV's jumped in again. Vince Carter, VC, thoughts on VC joining the Nets next year?
Well, just one quick note. I wouldn't be surprised if they started Dinwiddie in the playoffs for some reason. Like, that wouldn't be the worst idea. Dinwiddie tonight, like I was saying, was just like an excellent player. And I think him and D'Angelo are both need to play like 35 to 40 minutes when it comes to the postseason. They're just that much better than everybody else right now. And in terms of Vince Carter, I hate to be a hater, but he doesn't really bring much to the team. Like, he's not good. He got cooked by Rodions. He does probably more complaining than having a positive impact. He's a good veteran if he's just going to sit on the bench, but I don't think his overall impact is going to really help the Nets win games. And I know he's a big, you know, all-time Net, but still.
Yeah, if Jared Dudley were to leave, you know, and just a replacement guy to be on the bench as a sort of veteran presence, he's done that in Sacramento. He's doing that in Atlanta. So I think that It was Sacramento, wasn't it? I'm right.
Yeah, he was Sacramento. Yep.
Yeah.
Because he had that foul on Pat McCaw. That was a big deal.
Yeah, just to clarify. So, yeah, I think that he can add value as that sort of bench guy. He did say on PTI that, you know, he sees probably one more season in him. I think that he's still playing okay. He still looks spry enough. But I don't think that the Nets are going to, you know, go after him and sort of scout him. I think there could be some other teams, maybe some vet teams, you know, beat the Boston Celtics to join with Kyrie Irving or whoever. But he's going to have one more season, beat Atlanta, beat in Brooklyn or somewhere. But VC is a Nets legend. And who knows? Funny things could happen. Maybe even Toronto.
Yeah, I think it'd be more – if he was looking to just sign with a team to sit on the bench, Toronto probably makes more sense just because – obviously, I think his stretch with the Nets was a little bit better, but that's for a completely another podcast. Let's move on. Who else we got to talk about, Jack?
We got Will jumping in again. He thinks that Harris should start at the two and Damari should start at the three. What do you think?
I personally like Damari at the four. I like having that rotation. I wouldn't mind if he started at the four in the playoffs because you want to maybe start a veteran. But I think at the three, it kind of messes up the rotation where they don't really have anybody else to play four except Rodions and Damari.
Yeah, I think that there'll be mix and matches, and you know, we saw the closing sort of lineup tonight. Damari's always going to be out there. I don't think he necessarily cares anymore. I think that he's gone under the radar in so many aspects of this season, not to Nets fans, but to the NBA media in general. He's been absolutely sensational this season, and you know, he was good again tonight. He was very solid, 4 of 8 from the field. You know, he actually hit most of his free throws, 3 of 4 and 2 of 5 from three. A couple of rebounds, did have 3 turnovers, and I think that's one issue that the Nets have in terms of, you know, live ball turnovers. Joe Harris had a couple of careless ones. I think that if we can limit the live ball turnovers and just be, I think it was like, we had like 5 turnovers in the first half. And in that third quarter, we had, you know, at least 5 at that like 7 or 8 minute mark. Yeah. So I think it's just about maintaining consistency and maintaining just being careful with handling the ball.
Yeah, and just to get back to Will's question, I wouldn't mind seeing some more minutes out there with Rodions and Damari together. You know, I don't think you necessarily have to start that, but if you can stagger minutes at some points and they're on the floor together, I think they played pretty well when they're on the bench unit, so that's something to consider. But the sloppy turnovers definitely was something. I felt like that third quarter in general could have been a lot stronger. The Nets could have went up big, but they just got sloppy.
Yeah, and they started it off relatively well, and then it just really tapered off. And you can't do that to an Atlanta team at home who, you know, showed some nice form, and they have some real talent on the roster. And SSV jumped in again in terms of Alan Krabnik. Why is he so Katy Perry a la hot and cold? I added in the Katy Perry thing. He didn't say that. But yeah, why is Krab so hot and cold? I agree with Jack. Thank you. It's always nice to be agreed with. He doesn't really deserve his starting spot, but there's no good replacement unless LeVert gets back to form. Do we have an insight into why Alan Crabb is so hot and cold, Nick? It seems to be his tenure as a Net. You know,
it's been his career, I think. Even in Portland, I think he was a little bit hot and cold. You just probably noticed it less because he was more of a bench guy or more of a role player. And I think the Nets obviously had to rely on him a little bit more last year, so it stuck out. This year it hasn't been as bad, but I think Crabb just needs to find some type of zone where he needs to get in where, hey, I'm not knocking down my threes. Let me get to the line. We saw him do that once or twice, I want to say the first or second quarter, get to the free throw line. And like I said, if it gets to the playoffs and Crabb is still playing bad and, you know, they start him in the first game of the series and he's bad, I would just go with Dinwiddie. Like, you can – then you have LeVert coming off the bench. You could stagger minutes if you need to. He can kind of run the show. That might even get him going.
Yeah, I wonder, being, you know, a shooter, what his sort of routines are pre-game, post-game, those sort of things, you know, in terms of, like you said, sort of getting into that zone as you listen to music, all these different things.
Alan he posts Krabb's a lot of music Snapchats on, like, Instagram of, like, screenshots of what he's listening to. So I think he's a big music guy.
He does. I have seen that. But, you know, in a lot of those sort of Instagram things as well, we sort of see him not necessarily as engaged with the team as some of the other guys like Damari and Karras and D'Angelo and Rodion. So I'm not questioning the fact of, you know, his fit as a teammate. He's been, you know, his Nets tenure has been generally positive, and he's had, you know, some really flashy performances here and there. But yeah, in terms of just getting a routine and mentality, so, you know, when we were at the pregame, obviously Alan Crabb was still injured, but maybe when we head back, it'll be nice to sort of watch, you know, where he's shooting on the court, because, you know, we saw it from Joe Harris and we know he's money. That sort of stuck with me from my first ever memory seeing Joe Harris in a Nets uniform a few years ago. So I think that Alan Crabb just needs to get himself, he just needs to have one of those hot games. It's hard to say because he was so good early. It's almost a question that can't be answered, SSV.
Yeah, and I think one thing for Allen that he needs to develop is like a secondary skill. Like we have Joe Harris, we know he's an elite three-point shooter, but he also is very good at driving. You know, Allen Crabbe needs to develop, maybe it's driving to the rim, maybe it's a teardrop, maybe it's just a pull-up from the elbow. I think he needs a secondary scoring option, and we really don't see that from him.
Yeah, he's had his moments, but, you know, whether it's, you know, just the mid-range shot, just practicing that one or whatever it might be, just finding wherever you see that sort of space. But his up and down form is certainly worrisome. And obviously he is going to be part of this nine-man rotation for the rest of the season and hopefully the playoffs. So hopefully we see more good games than lackluster ones from AC.
Yeah, at least I would say he's been okay defensively. He hasn't been amazing. He hasn't really like stuck out, but he hasn't been terrible most of the time. So I give him props on that.
Man, Nick, just reading this like stat line, just the key sort of indicators. The Nets just beat them in field goal percentage. They easily destroyed them in three-point percentage, which is probably what won us the game. That and free throws. But, you know, we were out-rebounded. We were out-assisted. We tied in steals. We had one more block. We had more turnovers. We had less fast break points. And it was 62-32 in points in the paint. So, not the best KPIs for the Nets off this matchup.
I would say for the points in the paint, some of that's probably a little bit skewed because of all the free throws where the Nets were shooting a lot of free throws driving to the rim. So I wasn't crazy about that, but John Collins did cook the Nets. Like we were talking about off air, you know, his secondary bounce off misses is amazing. But like you said, they got outworked in a lot of categories, like out-rebounded where they're winning the rebounding battle, going to halftime. And we talked about on the pregame show, Atlanta turns over the ball more than any team in the league, and that's turnover percentage and turnovers per game. And the Nets could only force 10 turnovers.
Yeah, it's not good enough. And I think that was the key sort of defensive mindset and sort of, you know, factor that Coach Kenny preached at the start of the season, forcing more turnovers. We've done it in periods, but I don't think, to be blunt, we have the defensive talent to really sort of, you know, rack them up. We're not a Boston Celtics, an Indiana, a Milwaukee sort of team. You know, there are players that can do it, but it also has to be some factor on the opposing defense and their sort of carelessness with the ball. But should we preview the Detroit matchup a little bit, Nick?
Just one thing on the defense, Jack. I think also it's like lack of cohesion as a unit because you look at elite defensive teams. Yeah, they're more talented probably than the Nets, but their communication is on point. They're usually helping each other. And there's just too many times where the Nets are not helping each other and giving up wide open dunks. To start the game, Atlanta had like two John Collins dunks in a layup. So I think it's like communication is the area where they really need to improve. We've kind of given them some slack on that because the guy's coming back, but now they're getting to the point where this is becoming the rotation. They need to kind of pick that area up.
Yeah, I think it's more so like individually, everyone's worrying about their guy at the start of the game. And it's just like, all right, I'll worry about Trey. You worry about, you know, Alex Len. You worry about Torian Prince. Rather than just going, all right, let's just make the rotations. Let's just play basketball and read what happens. Those first few minutes where it was like a 6-0, 7-0-1, 7-1-1, whatever it was, I think is, you know, something that needs to be tightened up because if that doesn't happen, you know, you get those, you know, extra points going forward. I think the mentality needs to be that, like, you know, every bucket matters, you know, for the rest of the season and, you know, be it free throws or be it, you know, three pointers. We need to execute a little bit better because we're coming up against some very, very formidable opponents.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that also goes for the rebounding. Every possession counts where there were stretches where they did a great job putting bodies on John Collins and whoever was rebounding for Atlanta. But then at other points, they just got careless and there was balls that would take two or three bounces and the Atlanta guy would grab it. And I think that's just unacceptable.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that we need to eradicate, you know, the things that just shouldn't be happening, you know, on the other end of the floor.
Especially if you want to be a playoff team. Like, that's what it is. If you want to be an okay team, that's fine. But if you want to be a playoff team, this is the kind of stuff you need to cut out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there are plenty of teams around us that are playing some decent basketball. So if we can't, you know, get some form and do the right things, then, you know, a team will happily take our spot, be it Charlotte, Orlando, or Miami, who have been in, you know, up and down form, but some of those teams have been playing better than us.
100%. Jack, any other questions from the viewers before we move on to the preview?
Just some general comments. The fact, you know, Atlanta is reminiscent of the Nets last year a little bit. I would agree with that. Trey getting too many calls and Will saying that, you know, it's a playoff game coming on Monday.
Yeah, I some of the off-ball fouls for Trae Young really drove me nuts, but we can't really complain when the Nets shot 50 plus free throws. So whatever, it's going to happen. Definitely, Will's on point. You know, obviously, check out Will's work at otgbasketball.com as well. But it's a big game. They're going to have to play better than they did tonight if they want to win that game. Obviously, it's at home, so there will be a little bit more extra juice. But there's way too many errors they had tonight that they can't carry over to Monday.
Yeah, big is an understatement. Enormous, gargantuan, fantastic. It's going to be an absolutely massive game for this Nets squad. And we've had plenty of those sort of games throughout the season, but I think that this sort of takes it to a new level.
Yeah, this is a different thing. You know, like they've had pressure games earlier, but as you get later in the season, it picks up. And this is kind of building them for this final stretch for the playoffs. And I think the road trip does that too.
It does. And, you know, we haven't really necessarily – you can't prepare for these sort of games. You know, 2015, where the last sort of time we were making the playoffs with KG, Paul Pierce and stuff, it was a completely different squad. Whereas now we have such a young squad, obviously filled in with a few veterans here and there. How you play in these matchups determines whether you deserve to be in the playoffs or not. And, you know, it starts with Detroit. We sort of spoke about little bits and pieces in terms of how they've been playing. They've been on fire. I think they've been, like, you know, in net rating and some of those key indicators have been absolutely outstanding of, like, similar to what the Nets were in that sort of stretch. So they've been sort of the form team of the East for a lot of the season, you know, or a lot of this recent stretch post All-Star break. So this is going to be a really, really tricky matchup. The fact it's at home gives us, you know, a little bit of an edge. The Nets have played very well there this season, but I wouldn't count that as, you know, a really sort of swinging and turning point.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, they do have a win against Detroit at home this year already, so it'd be nice to get another one. And I think the interesting thing about Detroit is a lot of people are ready to write them off at the deadline when they traded Reggie Bullock, and then all of a sudden they picked up Wayne Ellington and things really started to click and they took another level. So that was really interesting. Like we kind of talked about, you know, Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin have just been pretty dominant for them. And Andre Drummond especially, Blake's been good all year, but Drummond's picked up his game substantially over this last month.
Yeah, and shout-outs to a couple of lesser likes as well. Luke Kennard, yeah, he's been shooting really nicely. I haven't seen a lot of Detroit matchups, but just listening and reading the media surrounding them, the Wayne Ellington, like you mentioned, Nick, it just allows him to space the floor so well, you know, because Reggie Jackson isn't an amazing three-point shooter
he's
either.
He's playing a lot better, though. That's a big plus for them, too.
He is playing well, and I think that, you know, he's probably going to want to make his voice heard and his play heard against the Nets, because, you know, he's a guy who's on a decent contract and he's coming up against some young feisty blokes and Spencer Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell, and he's probably going to want to shut them up in that sort of a sense. So it's going to be a very, very interesting matchup, and easily the most important one of the season and probably the most important game we've played in 2.5 years.
Yeah, probably the most important game. You're right, Jack. Obviously, and we could play one more important later in the season. And we kind of hinted at it in terms of defense. And I think team defense is going to be huge in this matchup, because Blake might need to be double teamed at times. Andre Drummond, if he gets a mismatch down low against one of the guards or they end up switching on him or something, really going to be important to communicate against his team.
Oh, it's essential. Absolutely and utterly essential. Will Jackson has chimed in. Brian from Seiko on Twitter. Kenny has said, and I quote, "I don't know what neighborhood Rhodey grew up in Latvia, but that must be one tough neighborhood."
Dude, he's a tough dude. And like we talked about it, he's not the biggest dude, but he's feisty. Like he's not scared of anything. And like, yo, he moved Alex Len on that poster. Like he hit him with his body and Len like moved over. He probably could have got an and-one on that play. I can't wait till next season, because Rodion's actually going to get foul calls.
And the fact is, like, you know, the moment we sort of, you know, this kid arrived, and he is a kid still.
Yeah, we could like, say that because he's, like, substantially younger than us. Like
Exactly. But the moment that this, you know, young man arrived, he's just like, I want to body Kristaps Porzingis. And it's just like that mentality sort of just set the stage for what Rodion Skuritz is all about. He's all about making an impact, and he's been absolutely bloody awesome all season. And we're going to need all of his talents and then some coming up against Detroit on Monday.
Yeah. And one thing I think is positive too is like Rodion's didn't play a ton for that little stretch, but I think it allowed him to like re-energize, because he did hit a slight like rookie slump or rookie wall, whatever you want to call it. And now he's more energized. And like we've talked about, Nets have 14 games remaining, I think like 33 days or something like that. So he should be able to be well rested for the playoffs. And like you said, they'll really need him, because he can take their game to another level. And he's a young guy, and like he's still going to get better over these next couple weeks.
That's a really good point in terms of the sort of less, the lack of minutes and the sort of minutes change from the coaching staff. And I think, you know, a little bit of credit should go there because of the fact that, you know, he wasn't playing well. So Coach Kenny sort of took him out of the rotation, lessened his minutes, and then he earned them back again and has steadily seen an increase there. So I think that Coach Kenny deserves a lot of credit there. A really good point from you, Nick. But in terms of his impact, you know, I think him and Damari Carroll, we can speak about D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie, but in terms of impact on the floor, I'd be curious to see in terms of, you know, plus minus, defensive, offensive rating. We know earlier in the season, Rodions were so important with that, but I think those two guys, be it the fact that they are our best wings, we're going to need them to be at their absolute best and fit and firing. You know, healthy is going to be super important as well. So hopefully that they have that mentality because it's this stretch is going to determine everything.
Yeah, the one thing I love about him and Damari is they just are always kind of going after the loose balls. One play really stuck out. I think it was the second quarter. He kind of ripped the ball from Alex Len, ended up throwing it down court to D'Lo for one of his, I think, his third dunk of the season.
Yeah, it was awesome. Absolutely awesome. And touching on Detroit again, SSV, Nick, you probably watched a little bit more Detroit basketball than I have. I know little bits and pieces. How has Reggie Jackson improved his game of late?
I think the most important thing for Reggie Jackson, he just looked a lot healthier of late. You know, he's obviously knee tendonitis has been a real problem for him. I want to say his three-point ball is starting to go down a little bit more. I haven't watched a ton of Detroit. You know, I'll catch it here and there. And usually I'm focusing on, like, Blake and Andre. But I think his efficiency has really turned up, and I think he's understanding his role a little bit better. But the main factor for him is just health because he hasn't been healthy in what seems almost since his first season in Detroit.
Yeah, I think health means everything when it comes to any player, especially a guy like Reggie Jackson. And I'll echo the sentiments of the fact that understanding his role. I think a lot of guys, when they get paid and they sort of get that sort of, you know, inflated sort of sense of self and the fact that, all right, well, I'm paid this much. I deserve this. But he is fit into being the number three sort of option on that team. You know, Andre Drummond, Blake Griffin, you know, he's sort of knowing that those guys are sort of leading the charge and he's sort of the complementary piece around them. And, you know, he's not the number three guy on a championship team, but he is on a sort of fringe playoff contender like the Detroit Pistons. So I think that he's been good and he's going to be a guy that's, you know, teams have to watch, have to scout for.
Yeah, and I think it's a big difference, like, to talk about Andre Drummond a little bit more. When he plays really hard and plays to his talent level, he goes from being, you know, a top 20 center to a top 10, borderline top 5 guy because he's so dominant on the boards. Like, he's a guy that can go out and get you 20 points and 20 rebounds, and it doesn't even make it look difficult. So I think when he plays really well and plays up to his standard, obviously we know Blake has been excellent, and he's probably having the best season of his career. He was just on my all underrated team for the NBA outlet, so I'm kind of concerned about those two. I'm really interested to see how the Nets defend them because I don't think they have guys that can defend them one-on-one.
No, it's going to be team defense. We talked about it. Unruly Star mentions Ish Smith as well. He seems to always cook us. Always he's like underrated.
He's a Nets killer, dude. He's a straight-up Nets killer, and I don't understand why. Like, I watch Ish Smith in other games, and he can't hit a shot, and then against the Nets, he'll hit, like, his highest three-point percentage of his career.
Yeah, I've got like memories of like Raul Neto as well. again,
Neto. Oh god, that one hurts a soul.
Again, we're coming up against Utah soon, so hopefully these guys don't cook us, you know, out of a win. But plenty of things to watch for in that Detroit matchup, Nick.
Yeah, one thing I'm looking for is I want to see Spencer Dinwiddie. He always obviously is looking for revenge against them, one of the teams that let him go, to get those opposing bigs in foul trouble. That's the best bet for the Nets. You know, their guards can attack a lot of their guards on the perimeter defense-wise. They're not amazing. It's kind of attacking Andre Drummond, attacking Blake Griffin. I think Jared Allen also showed something different tonight, the ability to draw free throws. Some of that was Atlanta being bad, but a lot of it was Jared Allen's activity.
Definitely all things to watch for.
Yeah, but any other final thoughts, Jack, before we get out of here?
Nah, just that every game is a must win and every game matters so much. Every game is a playoff matchup, essentially. If we do make it, Nick, and this preparation going forward, I think it holds us in good stead. But obviously, that's forecasting forward. Let's just get the Detroit win, hopefully, first.
To be honest, I'm excited about the hard stretch. Like, it actually excites me because if the Nets do get in the playoffs, they're going to be well prepared. They're going to have to be on the road and beat a lot of good teams. And they're going to give somebody a really difficult first round series if they're able to make through the stretch and have some success. But as always, Jack, pleasure talking hoops. Big thanks to everybody listening and sending us great questions. Also, check us out iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Also, check out the giveaway at OTG Basketball.